Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm honored to bring you Joyful Empowerment with Joanne Gajewski, one of our mages, sages, and seers, and she's welcoming back Sarah Mastros, who's already been on our channel at least twice to come to mind. Greetings and welcome, Joanne.
Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to Joyful Empowerment. Tonight I have the beautiful Sarah Mastros with us, and we're going to be talking about, you know, the holidays are a stressful time. And, you know, Sarah's a very empowering person. How does Sarah get that empowerment and maybe give us a little help to get through the holiday season?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I actually am one of those rare people who loves Thanksgiving. Like, I know it's not a popular holiday for a lot of reasons that I will talk about, but I personally, I really love it. For me, it's like a very empowering holiday, partly because, you know, I grew up in a mixed Jewish and atheist and Christian family. And so, like, December holidays could be pretty tense. Like, there was a lot of negotiating, right? But Thanksgiving is sort of an everybody holiday, and I really love that about it.
Well, I love Thanksgiving, too. It is one of my favorite holidays, and it's one of those things where, yeah, there's a negative spin to it, but to put a positive spin on it, like you said, it's a time of joy, and it's a time of gratitude, and that's what I choose to pull from it. You know, the gratitude of having what we have, the people that are in our lives, and things like that.
I agree completely.
And you were nice enough to post one of your PDFs, and I thought it was really, really cool what you put in there about passing the salt. And I know I always throw some on my left shoulder, but I never heard of it. Why don't you pass it hand to hand?
In Greek culture, it's considered unlucky to pass salt hand to hand because it increases the chances that you will spill it. So you put it down on the table first so that you don't... It would be very bad. It's considered very bad luck if a salt were to spill, like, while you're passing hand to hand. So in order to avoid that possibility, you put it down.
Okay, well, I know Italians do. It's kind of similar. You know, they always put it down in front of you. So I didn't know what the reasoning was behind that. That's interesting.
Well, you know, I actually have always assumed that is the reasoning. But, you know, I think it's like a lot of those sort of cultural superstitions, like, who really knows why we do, you know, like, why is that lost in time?
Well, it's funny because
I
was taking Dr. Jeremy's class, and I've noticed that culturally there are a lot of similarities in the traditional, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, like folklore and stuff like that, or what would you call it? Folk magic, not folklore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I grew up, my mom's family, I'm Jewish on my mom's side and Greek on my dad's side. And so,
wow, good food.
Yeah. Right? I feel really lucky to have grown up with, like, two intact sort of cultural transmissions in a world where, like, a lot of people don't really have any. So I feel really lucky to have grown up with, like, that connection to my ancestors. And I also found that, you know, for both my Jewish family and my Greek family, like, there are a lot of commonalities. And, like, my Italian friends, and I think broadly, like, and Turkish friends and Egyptian friends. Like, I think that whole sort of, I think since ancient times, you know, the Western Mediterranean, like, Rome and Greece, Egypt and the Holy Land, is, like, really all one big, complicated, interconnected culture and family. So I find, I agree that, like, a lot of the traditions mesh together really well.
That's funny because I agree with you on that too. Yeah, it's like very similar, even as far as just like food, if you look at food traditionally.
Exactly. The food traditions are similar and the cultural traditions are similar. And, like, in a way that is not necessarily as similar with some of my friends who have a lot of, like, British or, like, Western European, especially, like, Anglo-Saxon Protestant background, I find there's often much more of a cultural divide there than there was, like, between my Christian and Greek family, except for matters of religion, right? So, like, Christmas/Hanukkah was, like, a complicated holiday when some of your family's Jewish and some of your family's Christian, right? But Thanksgiving, at least in my family, was not a religious holiday at all, right? And so for me today, it kind of is a religious holiday for me. It's, for me, very much about the connection with the land and what I call the land factors, you know? So I think in traditional cultures, there's, like, a lot of categories of ancestors, right? There's, like, blood ancestors, and then there's people who are, like, members of your tribe, and then there's people who, like, have lived and died on the land where you live, right? And then there's people who speak the same language as you. And I think in traditional cultures, that's actually mostly all the same people, right? But for most Americans, that is not the same people. So I think of, like, you know, there's this inheritance that we all have, a cultural inheritance that we have, like, by dint of being English speakers, right? There's, like, language ancestry, right? But then there's also blood ancestry and family ancestry, which, again, you know, for many people, like, your blood kin and your family are not always the same people either. And for almost everybody, there's some people, you know, I have family I'm not technically related to, and there are people I'm related to that I do not consider family, and I think that's true for most people, right?
Yes,
but then
exactly.
We also have what I call the land festers, right? The people who, like, lived and died on the land where I am now living, right? And for me, like, Thanksgiving is primarily about spirits of land, right? Like, nature worship, because I'm a big old tree hugger, and also, like, a communion with the land ancestors, by which I mean, like, the whole spectrum from, like, the first human being who ever set foot on this piece of land, and really our elder kin ancestors too. Like, before there were humans here, there were millions of years of living things who are also, like, close kin. That's the nature of, to me, like, the one of the
that would be like
powerful,
spirits,
like,
of place, right? I don't mean to interrupt, but that's like spirits of place. Okay.
Absolutely.
Now I'm on track.
But
yep.
Also, like, individual human ancestors, right? So, like, for example, the land where I live was a battlefield during the French and Indian War. So, like, I have a lot of, like, active ancestors here, right? And, like, you know, I live in Pittsburgh, but even further, you know, I grew up further east. And there's, like, a, you know, in addition to our native ancestors, right, there's also many hundreds of years of other, of white people who lived here. Well, actually where I lived, maybe not primarily white people, but English-speaking people, I shall say, right, in my neighborhood. And so, like, for me, like, part of working with the land is working with that entire history. So I think it's really important. Like, I am a huge advocate that people really learn about their local history. And I know most people listening aren't here in Pittsburgh, but if you are, I'm going to recommend a book. I don't remember the author's name, but the book is called A Colony Sprung from Hell. And it is about the colonial history of our region here in Western Pennsylvania. And it was, I quite enjoyed that book. And what a title, right?
Yeah.
So
it's like, okay. But no, if you think about it, in those, you know, in Pennsylvania, you've got, like, I mean, just the area in general, and most of the Civil War based in those areas, you know what I mean, too, as well. So you've got a lot of those ancestors there. I don't, you know, do you get where I'm going?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm a little bit more in Western Pennsylvania. So this actually wasn't part of Pennsylvania during the Civil, I guess it was, but it, the Civil War didn't take place. So I'm pretty far west for that. But, you know, something that I think about a lot, right, in terms of, like, local, like, the history of my land, particularly the more recent. Like, I am also very interested in the native history of my land, which I'll maybe talk about at some point on this call. But, you know, I live very close. So I live about 5 miles away from the headwaters of the Ohio River, right? So I live almost on the banks. Like, you can see the banks of a Monongahela River outside my windows behind my house.
Oh, cool.
But 5 miles from here, the Monongahela and the Allegheny come together to form Father Ohio, right? And that's such an important river in history, but particularly in recent history, like American history. So, like, the Ohio River was the only natural boundary between free states and slave states. So, like, the Mason-Dixon line between Pennsylvania and Maryland is, like, an imaginary line made up by humans. But the Ohio River was the only actual boundary. So if people, like, close their eyes and just imagine a scene from a story or a movie where they've, like, seen a slave escaping to freedom, the river in that is the Ohio River. And similarly,
oh, wow.
Like,
I never do that.
People, yeah. So if you imagine, like, the 1920s and you're seeing, like, you know, like a big revival meeting where people are, like, getting baptized in the river, that river that you're imagining is also probably the Ohio. That sort of renewal Baptist movement began, like, around the Ohio. That's what I mean about, like, I think it's really, you can't, in my opinion, like, what it means to have a relationship with land spirits is about understanding the ecology of where you live, but it's also about understanding the history, right? And so, you know, the first time Abraham Lincoln ever saw an enslaved person was when he was a teenager, and it was on a boat on the Ohio River.
Wow.
Right? Like, Father Ohio has such a, like, rich and amazing and devastating and tragic, like, in the phrase sold down the river, the river that they're talking about is not the Mississippi, it's the Ohio. Like, that's where that phrase comes from.
Wow, it's
like,
funny, because
Ohio,
I live near a river, too, the Androscoggin, the Androscoggin River, which connects from a bunch of other rivers, and where I live, they call it the City of the Trees. And basically, because it was logging, and they used these rivers to move the logs and move different things. And yeah, it is a very spiritual place as far as, like, and I love anything to do with water, which, you know, because I'm always taking pictures of stuff. I'm like you,
right?
The tree hugger. You know, and it's true. Yeah, I mean, to learn the history of where you are. And there's also a very heavy Native American history up here as well. So we have to take that into, you know, the colonization and the Native Americans, because I'm east. I'm in northern New Hampshire, Berlin, the White Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
the spirit's
a
place.
Where I live, like, the history is really complicated where I live because of our geography. So, like I said, I live at the confluence of many rivers, like, of three rivers. It's called the Three Rivers region. And so it's, like, strategically a very valuable location. So, like, as soon as there were humans in the Americas, and in fact, like, the Meadowcroft Rock Shelter, which is about 45 minutes from where I live, is one of the oldest documented places of human habitation in North America. And so there's, like, there's always this really complicated history here. Like, it, my region has always been very multicultural because the geography of the rivers makes it, like, an ideal trading location. So there've always been, like, at least for the last 1,500 years, there's really never been a single culture in charge here for more than a couple hundred years. Like, it's always turning over. It's always, like, a really rich and complicated history. And I think that's true. You know, I live in a city, which makes it a little bit easier to research. And I live in a place with, like, a very distinctive geography. But I really think that, like, we talk about ley lines a lot, you know, places where, like, power moves through the land. But I feel like rivers are the most obvious kind of ley line. Like, you know exactly where they are. And so, and, you know, most humans on Earth live in river valleys. Like, that is both the environment in which humans evolved and also just most humans live in river valleys. And so I really feel like a spiritual exercise that I recommend to everyone is to really, really think. And, like you should know the facts of this, but you should also feel the spirit of it. Like, when a drop of rain falls where you live, how does it get from there to the ocean? Because almost everywhere on Earth, it goes to the ocean eventually. And, like, I think it's a very important spiritual exercise to connect the land to know how that happens. And like, you know, I live quite near a river and on a hill. So it's actually a little weird. Like, it's different if it hits in my backyard or my front yard. Like, it ends up in different rivers.
Yeah.
Because I live on a hill. But I think that's a really important spiritual exercise.
It's funny because
journey in spirit along that path.
It's funny because I had to do something like that because I took a when I was doing my undergrad, I had to do environmental biology.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned how the rain goes, and we learned all the different ways, and I had to figure out how it got to the Atlantic Ocean. So that's so funny that you mentioned that. And I learned a lot just from that exercise, even though it was scientific, it really
mm-hmm.
opened up my eyes spiritually too. And my friend Wayne Stelgrove says that the Native American word for water is called flowing harmony. Because water, you know, it is energy. It carries all that energy, carries it out to the sea. And it's, a very important aspect to our lives. You know, in
Absolutely.
The English language, we call it water. But
mm-hmm.
in Native American language, it's flowing harmony.
I gotta say, I'm a little
water
skeptical about that claim, only because there's thousands of Native American languages. But I like the sentiment of it.
Well,
technical.
he's a Saltaw native, so I don't know. In Canada, like way in the north, so I'm pretty sure he knows what he's talking about, but I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if it's a regional thing.
I don't know what language that is, but yeah, that's awesome. I did not mean to suggest he didn't know what he was saying.
Yeah, no, I take his word for it. I don't know exactly what language he's speaking. But they say the word water translates because they say, you know, the colonial language doesn't do justice to words. And how they word it, it translates to, if you were looking at it in the English version, it translates to flowing harmony.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I've always loved to just sit by a river and let that energy, I mean, you know, even in witchcraft practice or whatever, you know, spiritual practices, water is emotion, it's energy, it's carrying,
mm-hmm.
it's movement, it's flowing. I love that. And, you know, bringing that to your holiday, that harmony, that flow, that's an important aspect of holidays like Thanksgiving and, you know, going into the season, because like you said, it is stressful. Multicultural families have a hard time, you know, especially if you throw the religion aspect in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for me, that's really the core of Thanksgiving, right? Is that
I think that's
sort of
beautiful.
Right? Because today I do think of it as like a deeply spiritual holiday, right? That is about like community and land and that connection
yeah.
with land and ancestors. But so in my community, like what we do on Thanksgiving is we like tell the story of our land. And I think that's really important because I think, you know, Thanksgiving, like the way we were taught, I can't say for everybody, but like the way I was taught about Thanksgiving as a kid, not even really by my family, but like at school was like, totally false and terrible, right? Like that notion of like, oh, the pilgrims and the Indians got together, like that is not even remotely what happened. And I think, you know, so like I said, I grew up Jewish, right? And so in Judaism, a lot of our holidays, like sort of the central ritual doesn't actually happen at synagogue. It happens at home, right? Around the dining
yes.
table. And there's like a
I'm learning that.
That's close with that. Right. I assumed you knew, but I didn't know if everybody listening did, right? And so that script for like a table, a home table ritual is called a Haggadah, right? And,
Ooh.
You know, you hear about them mostly at Passover, but lots of holidays have Haggadot. And so I really, I like that as a ritual style. And I think it works really well for paganism where like, you know, a coven is not 500 people the way a church is, right? It's like small. Everybody can sit around a table and like, eat a festive meal together. And for me, that's like it's a ritual form that I really enjoy, right? Is a ritual meal
yes.
that comes with like a script that tells a story and sings some songs. And so that's what I do on Thanksgiving. right? And so we start off by talking about, like, the exact piece of land where we are, right? So we cast a circle, like, by naming the trees nearby, right? And then we talk about, we call in other land spirits, right? And then we talk about the history of Thanksgiving, right? Because, like I said, like, people were lied to about what the history of Thanksgiving is. Right. So can I read a little bit from the Haggadah about the history of Thanksgiving?
Absolutely. I think it is. I think what you're saying is so beautiful. So, yes, I would love for you to read some.
So just a little background for people who aren't familiar with a Passover Seder. So this ritual, this Thanksgiving ritual that I wrote, structurally, it is modeled on a Passover Seder. And it's a ritual where there is an expectation there's kids at the table. Right. So it's sort of framed at, like, you're explaining to kids what happened, and there's four categories of people you are explaining to in the Passover Haggadah, and those are the same, the titles of the things I'm going to read are going to reflect that, right? So for the wicked child, we say, it didn't happen like that. Thanksgiving did not begin as a peaceful exchange between pilgrims and the indigenous peoples of the place we now call Massachusetts. In October of 1621, when the invaders celebrated their first harvest, the first Americans, whose home this was, were not invited. In fact, just a few days before, a wooden palisade had been erected to keep them out. In 1637, when the leader of the colonists officially proclaimed this holiday, they were giving thanks for the successful massacre of 700 Pequot children, women, and men. By 1777, the festival had spread throughout the so-called 13 colonies, and in 1779, President George Washington declared November 26th a National Day of Thanksgiving. We come together today to mourn this history of indigenous genocide, right? So I'm first going to tell this story, like actually the story you have been told about this holiday is false. Here's some history. And then we move on to talking about, like, other ways to understand it. So to the wise, we say, so in my tradition, like, when we do this at Witch House, like, when my coven has Thanksgiving together, right, we're taking turns reading. So when I say, like, this section and then that section, this would be different people talking, but I'm just going to read it. To the wise, we say, Thanksgiving celebrates the abolition of slavery. The United States of America is built on a foundation of genocide and slavery, which we struggle to overcome. In April of 1861, the United States entered into the Civil War, defending ourselves against domestic terrorists in the long overdue struggle to end the abomination of slavery. By the summer of 1863, it looked like all hope might be lost. But then in early July, more than 23,000 brave and loyal Americans, more than a quarter of them are fellow Pennsylvanians, I'm here in Pennsylvania, died in service to liberation at the Battle of Gettysburg. Many Confederate traitors lost their lives that day as well. The tide of the war was turned, although much hard fighting remained. It was in thanks for that victory that Abraham Lincoln declared a new national holiday, Thanksgiving. He said in a speech written by William Seward, "The year that is drawing toward its close has been filled with the blessings of fruitful fields and healthful skies. To these bounties, which are so constantly enjoyed that we are prone to forget the source from which they come, others have been added, which are of so extraordinary a nature that they cannot fail to penetrate and soften even the heart which is habitually insensible. It has seemed to me fit and proper that they should be solemnly, reverently, and gratefully acknowledged as with one heart and voice by the whole American people. I do therefore invite my fellow citizens in every part of the United States and also those who are at sea and those who are sojourning in foreign lands to set apart and observe the last Thursday of November, next as a day of Thanksgiving." Right? Then we have a longer piece that I'm not going to read to you where we say, "For the perplexed, both celebration and mourning are holy things," right? And we talk about, like, what it means. So there's a quote from Martin Luther King from a sermon called "The Death of Evil on the Seashore." And so we talk a little bit about, like, what does it mean to be celebrating when also so many things are fucking terrible, right? And that's the next thing. And then the last thing, we sing a song, right? And so for me, like, that's what Thanksgiving is, right? To me, Thanksgiving is about, like, these amazing ideas, right? Like, when the lie we were sold about the history of Thanksgiving, like it has in it this core that this is a holiday where we give thanks for the bounty of the land and we give thanks for being together with our family. And we like recommit ourselves to these ideals of like truth and liberty and justice. But I think it's important that we also like not obfuscate the reality that we are not a country of liberty and justice and truth, right? And that we mourn our like continuing failure to live up to those ideals. Sorry, I know.
Oh,
I'm really
absolutely.
I guess I'm giving a sermon on the show today.
That's all right. You know what I mean? And that, you know, this is what empowers you though. And this is, you know, and that's what I like to highlight about people. And so people understand that whatever brings you joy, you know, is what you need to be doing. And this clearly brings you joy and it gives you strength. And clearly, you know, you've had challenges. Like you said, you come from a multicultural background. I'm sure that had its challenges. We all have different things that we go through.
So I'll tell
and
you,
look how successful you are. You know what I mean? And that's what I want people to see.
You know, another thing about Thanksgiving. So, you know, like Thanksgiving was the big holiday for my family. Like we went to other people's houses for Passover. Like we went to my aunt's house for Passover. Like we went to a different aunt's house for Christmas. But Thanksgiving was the one we had at our house, right? So I think
yeah.
Thanksgiving is like the family holiday. And,
yeah.
you know, I was really lucky. Like, I mean, I'm not saying everything's perfect in my family of origin, but, like,
I love my family,
and they love me, and I feel like I was really blessed to have great parents. They died in a car accident in 2012. And
oh, I'm so sorry.
In late October, right? And so the proximity of that and Thanksgiving made Thanksgiving, like, really hard for me for a long time. So for me, Thanksgiving is also very much about, like, ancestors, like, so about living family, but also about the ancestors.
Yeah, but this is perfect, though, because look what you took with that trauma that you experienced, and you made it into something beautiful.
I tried.
And that's pretty amazing.
Well,
that's
thank
pretty
you.
Amazing.
You
know,
thank
you should be very proud of that. And,
well,
and you know, and this is what I want people to see, that, yes, life isn't always wonderful. But, you know, I don't want to say you can put, it's what you do with that trauma that matters. You know what I mean? Like where you go with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think that is very true. You know, I really like, I think of myself as like really unfairly blessed. Like the gods are like unfairly playing favorites for me. And I try and remain very cognizant of the fact that, like, not everybody gets that, and I try to spread my blessedness privilege around. But I do think that, like, there's a lot to be said for how you play the cards you were dealt, you know?
Well, the way I see it is I'm a holistic healer, right? I'm a trauma
mm-hmm.
therapist. You aligned yourself. You didn't just heal your mind. You healed your spirit. Your body, your soul, you aligned yourself in all those areas of your life. You know what I mean? Like, you know, people think, oh, I'm going to a therapist and nothing is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not downing therapy, obviously, because I'm a therapist. But if you're not doing other things in your life to align with that healing, you know, it's not just, you know, yeah, you're going to a therapist. That's healing the mind. That's good. The brain, the emotion, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you also need to align yourself spiritually, chakras, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's absolutely true. I think that, like, you know,
and you embody that, you know, I mean, you did the whole thing.
A spiritual trauma and a mental trauma, and every like mental trauma is also a spiritual trauma and also a physical trauma. And I think in our culture, like we just don't really have spiritual healers. Like some people maybe have a priest they can talk to, but I feel like, so in our culture, I feel like those spiritual wounds, like just never get treated until they become a crisis. you know, and I feel really lucky to have like sort of already been on like a spiritual path and sort of already have a pretty sort of rigorous meditation practice when my parents died, because I really like, I don't know, I really mean this, like, I don't know how I would have gotten through those first couple months if I hadn't had that already. You know what I mean? Like, I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I encourage everybody to learn to meditate before you really, really need it, because at some point you're going to really need that ability.
No, I advocate for those quite a bit. Mindful meditation. Mm-hmm. I'm also learning about somatic healing, because
mm-hmm.
even though you acknowledge it, you might still hold it in your body somewhere,
yeah,
because you're not
absolutely.
Dealing with it or releasing it. So I advocate for that. You know,
mm-hmm.
yoga, meditation, tai chi, a hike, a walk. Whatever, release that emotion physically as well. Learn to pay attention to what your body's saying. You know, how do you feel physically when you think about that? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, align it all together. And you're right, do it before you need it.
Yeah.
You know?
But also it's there when you need it. Like, yeah, and also community. I feel like, especially in the last few years, like, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but, like, it really does feel like there is a concerted effort to, like, keep us from having robust communities. You
Absolutely.
Know what I mean? So I really encourage people. And like, I love my online community, and, like, I'm so glad that I get to talk to all of you. But it is not
yeah.
a substitute for, like, sharing bread around a table with your neighbors.
No.
Because
I'd love to come to your house for Thanksgiving or have you at mine, you know.
I'd love to have you.
That's a totally different experience.
Exactly. And
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You need to have that as well. You're absolutely right. That's social,
yeah,
spiritual,
really do,
communal.
And I understand how hard it is, especially for those of us who are single. And like if I didn't go out of my way to see other humans, I could just not see other humans for weeks at a time. Right.
Oh, I'm married and I can still do that myself.
Right. And that is not good for us. And I feel like our evil overlords would like us to never see other humans. Like, I
Absolutely.
Think when they figure out how to put us each in our own little matrix pod, they will be 100% there for that. So I really encourage people to like it is a brave and courageous and radical act to just go out in the world and talk to people. Talk to your neighbors.
Yeah.
Right? Talk to
as,
like,
as an INFJ, that's hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an INFJ.
Yeah,
I don't know what your person. And it is hard because, you know, I like to be social, but I, like you said, I could be in my house for a week, for weeks at a time and be content.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I think it is hard. And it's hard, like, I also, it is, like, structurally hard, especially, truthfully, like, I really feel for the men on this one. I feel like, even as a woman, I get a lot of weird looks when I talk to strangers. Like, we're not allowed to talk to strangers anymore, and I feel like that is even more true for men in a way that, like, I think it's weird that we live in a society where it is suspect to have a conversation with a stranger. I do. I think
yeah,
it's
exactly.
really good for people to talk to strangers. So that's my, I really am preaching tonight. But I just think it's so
person,
important.
I talk
to
people all the time. You know, I'm the person that's
yeah.
in line, and I've got the person telling me their life story behind me, you know, and it's like,
mm-hmm.
wow,
exactly.
that's really deep. So
right?
I've always
and
been
I,
that
I just,
person.
Yeah, me too. Me too. But I feel like, it's, I feel like less and less people are like that. When I talk to young people, they are legitimately
yes.
some of them, like, scared to do that. And I understand why. I really mean it. Like,
young
like,
kids today are
a,
afraid
like,
of Elmer's glue.
Against, like, there is a
young
cultural
kids.
Narrative being pushed on us that's bad. And I just think it's a bad cultural narrative.
A lot of things are bad.
Funny.
Remember when you were at school, did you play with Elmer's glue and, like, peel it off your fingers and, like, look at the fingerprints? Today's kids are terrified of that stuff. They're like, oh, I'm getting glue on me. I'm like, seriously?
I agree.
We used to love
saying,
it. We'd
like,
be peeling it off our fingers.
It's not those kids' fault. Like, there is a control mechanism present in our culture that wants them and wants all of us to be afraid of everything and most importantly, afraid of each other. And I think
I'm like, it's Elmer's glue.
Yeah.
I used to love having that. I'd look at my fingerprints and
oh, absolutely.
My palm
really,
prints.
For young people out there, if you haven't tried it, like, I really do encourage you to, like, coat your hand in Elmer's glue, let it dry, and slowly peel it off. It's like, it's actually a really cool sensation. And then you have this weird, like, you have this, like, model of your hand almost. Right, that peels. I mean, it's hard to keep it in one piece. But
and we
really
only had
fun.
The white glue back then. Today, they've got all different colors of that Elmer's school glue. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can make a really cool collage with that stuff.
When I was a teenager, we used to spike our hair with Elmer's glue.
Oh, no way, really?
Yeah, it actually works really well, but you got to wash it out with cold water. Because if it gets hot, like if you put hot water in it, it kind of like bakes into your hair.
Oh,
like,
God.
Now they have like, now at the grocery store, there's just like hair goo specifically meant for like spiking hair. But that was not.
Yeah, we didn't have that. No.
No, we just
we were lucky if we had gel. We had that. Wait, it wasn't even gel. It was that dippity doo stuff.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah,
it came in like pink or blue or whatever, you know. Ugh.
Yeah. No, you can't get punk spikes in your hair with that stuff. No way.
No.
Elmer's glue. Yeah. We also used to dye it with Kool-Aid.
Yep. And we used to use lemon to lighten it.
Yep.
Or remember Sun-In? Remember the days of Sun-In?
Oh, yeah. So for
you put it in your hair.
That was like a commercial product that was basically just lemon juice. And you were encouraged to squeeze it in your hair and then sit in the sunshine to put highlights in your hair. That was a real thing, like when we were young.
And for us brunettes, to our horror, it turned our hair orange.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
My hair
it
is like
didn't
orange,
make my hair blonde.
It actually worked great in my hair. My hair is the right color. Like, it started off strawberry blonde, so that stuff worked really well.
Yeah, see, you were, us brunettes got the short end of the stick on that.
Well, that's okay, because I was mostly dyeing it, like, pink with Kool-Aid, so.
Yeah, we didn't have all the fun stuff and product today. And I had naturally curly hair, which back then was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was.
So, what do you do for Thanksgiving?
Basically, what I do is I have Thanksgiving for people and friends that we call it a misfit family.
Mm-hmm.
They are either working, they have no place to go, or some of us just don't really interact with our families for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last 10 years, I've been hosting that at my home, and we get together and we start putting up the Christmas village. We do meat pies the night before. We start, I make lasagna and pasta. Basically, it's a day of eating. And then we finally have turkey, like, later on in the day. I know Jason Mankey was like 2:00. I'm like, there's no way. I said, I'm up the whole night before prepping. There's no way I'm going to be able to. I need to sleep a little bit. But
right. No, we were an afternoon Thanksgiving people when I was a kid, but maybe not quite that early. I think we probably maybe around like 4. I would
say my mother was a 1:00 person.
Oh gosh. Well, we had a lot of family that was driving in from a ways away.
I was always driving in, and it was like, and I worked nights. I used to work for the airlines, and it's like, you know, I it's like I'm getting out of work late at night, and I got to race to Massachusetts for 1:00, you know. And most of the time to just be traumatized by various situations. But so I started doing my own tradition with my family, and we have a set of people that it's just become our tradition every year. And we eat dinner at like 6, 7 o'clock. We don't rush. Whenever you get here, you get here. It's the misfit family. We break all the rules.
That sounds lovely.
You know,
that's what I normally do. That's what I've done every year since my parents died, really. So
yeah, some people come for dessert. Some people come for the whole thing. You know, it's free form.
And then this year, actually, when you guys are listening to this, I will be in the car driving. I'm actually going to see my mom's family for Thanksgiving this year. It's my first year there, but we'll see how it goes. I'm expecting it to go well. I like the family.
How are you feeling about that? Is it bringing up some, or are you okay?
It did at first, but now I'm good with, I'm really looking forward to it, actually. Like, because of COVID, and then some, weird car trouble over and over, I hadn't gotten to see my family in, quite a while. And then just recently sort of, got to see everybody at my cousin's wedding shower. My baby cousin's getting married. So I'm going to be there for Thanksgiving this year, and that'll be nice. So, yeah, when you guys
That's great.
As you guys are listening to this, usually, when I scheduled this, I was expecting that I would be cooking while you guys were listening, but indeed, I'm going to be driving, as I imagine many of the people listening to this are.
Yeah. And, this year, my brother's like, oh, I want to do it at my house. But he's fighting with my son. I don't know. I just don't want to get involved in the drama. I'm like, I don't know.
Family drama is always so sad.
And my misfit holiday, and I was like, oh, well, what if I don't do it? Everybody was like, no, this is home. I'm like, oh. It's hard, especially when you go to the market today and look at the food prices. It's very stressful.
I gotta say I'm not unhappy that I'm not buying food for 20 people this year, which
I
normally.
I'm like, God, I could have skated out of that. No, I'm only kidding.
Right? It's driving to Philadelphia, even with a night of hotel, it is maybe cheaper.
I know, seriously. No, that's true though. And I noticed it last year because I would spend $300 and get all kinds of stuff. Really great appetizers, charcuterie, you name it, I had it all. Last year, same amount of money, I got half the stuff.
Oh, I know.
This
and
year, I'm totally dreading it. I'm like, what am I going to get, a turkey and some potatoes?
Turkey and potatoes, and that's supposed to be cheap. You know what I mean? I am a little, this will be, the first year that I haven't done that Thanksgiving Haggadah in many years.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. I'm glad I get to do it with you guys tonight.
I know. Well, enjoy the fact that you get a little break from it, because sometimes it is nice to just sit and enjoy, but I love to cook because to me, even culturally or throughout my life, because I worked for the airlines, I've always worked in hotels, food industry. Mm-hmm. I connect with people through food. I meet somebody, I have a lot of Indian friends and I learned a lot about Indian food. Show me what's your favorite dish that, your culture is known for. And I've learned a lot of things that way just through food. And I find that it brings everybody together,
agree. Something I like to do at Thanksgiving is eat only foods native to the Americas. So no wheat, cornbread, and we don't always manage because I don't do all the cooking and I'm not going to tell other people that they're not allowed to cook things. But I really, for me, that's part of communing with the land and the ancestors, right? Not just with words, but in what we eat. And for me, usually Thanksgiving is the last of the fresh produce from the garden.
Yep.
Right. So I've got two squash left from this summer's garden. I mean, nice. I have a bunch of winter squash. I have two summer squash left. Right. And for me, usually, it depends on the weather year to year, but Yep. For me in Pittsburgh, like, we've really always had a frost by Thanksgiving, usually around Halloween is our first frost. So, like, for me, it's
As an Italian, we got to throw in a little lasagna or big ziti into the Thanksgiving mix.
Absolutely.
But I'm the same way. I like the traditional, and, like, I'll make some big ziti for people to munch on during the day while dinner's cooking and we're prepping and doing all these things, you know, have a meatball or whatever. But most part, I'm with you. I like the traditional harvest foods, you know.
I agree. And then usually, so this year was the first year my apple trees were big enough to have apples. So I'm going to make a little tiny, I'm going to make a pie, which I'm going to have to supplement with store apples because my trees are only 5 years old. So I really only got 4 apples. But I'm excited to eat like apples out of my own trees this year at Thanksgiving. I've been saving them for Thanksgiving. And, you know, I was talking about Lancesters. I'll tell another where I live Lancester story. So, I mentioned that I live on a battlefield from the French and Indian War. So this land stayed just sort of an empty field for a long time. So my neighborhood basically was built in the 19-teens, right? But shortly after the American Revolution, the new federal government instituted a tax on whiskey, which was very unpopular where I live. And, you know, we like to joke it's because everybody was drunk, but it's because the way the tax was written was like deeply favorable to like giant brewing corporations. And it was like putting small liquor makers, which where I lived and in most of America meant hard cider makers, out of business, right? So it was like, it was just corporate. Just like today, it was just like in favor of giant corporations over small producers, regional producers, right? So it was very, very unpopular where I was. And so we had something called the Whiskey Rebellion, right? Which was a full out rebellion. Like George Washington rode in at the head of an army to put this rebellion down. But, right, before that happened, right, a lot, the sort of people, the militias gathered right here on this land where I live, right? And they talked about seceding from the United States and joining France. They talked about riding into the city and just guillotining every rich person and tax collector they found, which
has some
escape from that position more and more every day. Right? And
starting to understand that a lot.
Cooler heads prevailed, and they did not guillotine anybody. They did riot quite a lot. But during that like raucous debate on this field while they were planning it, one of the people there was John Chapman, who owned a local orchard, right? And he had a vision of who he would say the Virgin Mary appeared to him, an angel, and told him to lay down his weapons, walk west, and plant apple trees. And he did. And today he is known as Johnny Appleseed. Like Johnny Appleseed received his calling here on this land where I live. So I'm like
that
especially
so
excited.
Cool.
One of the apple trees that I plant is like one of his varieties. Right?
That,
so
that is
one
awesome.
Yeah, that tree's only 4 years old, so it doesn't have any apples on it yet. But I'm really excited about my Johnny
Appleseed. Yeah, but wouldn't it have the genetics of it? No?
Say that again?
Wouldn't it have the genetics of it in the seeds or whatever? You know, like the...
Yeah, so that's
that
what I'm saying. So most of the apple trees, so I, you know, I live in the city, but I own the empty lot next door to me. So I have like, for people in the city, I have a really big yard, but like I appreciate the people in the suburbs have like crazy yards. So they're like, when I moved in, I planted 6 apple trees. Like, so I have apple trees. And so apple trees are clones of each other. So like every golden delicious apple tree, it's not grown from a seed. It's grown from a cutting. It's actually a clone of the golden delicious apple, right? Almost all modern apple cultivars. Like if you plant the seeds from an apple you bought at the grocery store, what will grow will be basically like a wild apple tree. So it is an apple tree, but the apples that it has will like not be delicious, right? And so, yes, I have a cloned cutting from one of Johnny Appleseed's original apples, which took a long time for me to track down that tree. Like, it was not that easy to find that tree. But it's not big enough to have apples yet. And then I also have a lot of like regular American modern apples, Golden Delicious. And I tried to grow one of those Honeycrisp apples, but it did not survive.
I never knew that you had to grow it from a cutting. I always thought you could plant the seeds.
Well, you can plant the seed, and like what comes out will be an apple tree, but it'll be closer to what we would call like a crab apple. Like it'll have probably. I mean, every single seed in an apple tree, every apple, right? It's just like humans, right? Like every egg you have or like every sperm a guy has, like it's like a different genetic mix, right? And so kids aren't exactly the same as their parents. And that's true in apple, in most fruit trees as well, right? So like even two apples from the same tree, like their seeds will give rise to very different plants. But generally, like what we modern people think of as like a regular apple, like a grocery store apple, like that is not what wild apples taste like. That's like a highly, like very carefully thousands and thousands of years of human breeding to produce those kinds of apples. And then we clone them. And usually they're on what's called rootstock. So it's actually like the roots are a more wild and robust apple tree. And then the top of the tree is actually a different kind of apple tree. Sorry for the giant apple trees, which I understand.
No, that's awesome. You're talking to the Grim Reaper of plants. We're running low on time, and I'd like people to know how to get a hold of you if they want to, learn more about you, participate in your things.
So the easiest thing to do is truthfully just put my name into Google with quotes. So it's Sarah, S-A-R-A, Mastros, M-A-S-T-R-O-S. And Google definitely knows who I am. It's like it's not a very common. But you can also go to witchlessons.com, like W-I-T-C-H lessons.com, and that's probably the other easy way to find me. And then you can see all my stuff, books and courses and whatever. You can see from there. Sign up for my newsletter.
Yes, and you will learn a lot of interesting things because I love like just seeing different things. I'm really interested in the sigils, but I'm like, I'm so afraid. I'm curious and afraid.
What are you afraid of?
I don't know, that I'll conjure something that I can't control.
Yeah, it's actually pretty hard to conjure things. Like, it's not that easy to accidentally conjure something you can't get rid of. But I do teach an intro class, and then you wouldn't have to be afraid.
Really?
Yep, absolutely.
I might have to sign up for that because...
Yeah.
Seriously, you know, it's just interesting to me, you know, because I see a lot of people working with sigils now, and I'm like, oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, lesson 3 is sigil. I'll make a witch of everyone. Hooray!
You know, but yes, I have definitely had fun talking with you about Thanksgiving and just, you know... You're such a bright light, and I think people need to see that.
Thank you.
And that's what I try to do with my show, you know, joyfully empowering people.
Well, I love that. Thank you so much for having me.
There's enough negativity in the world. And you can, as always, you can catch any of my past broadcasts on Blog Talk Radio, on demand, or, you know, live if you're listening live. And thank you, everyone. And next month, my guest will be the wonderful Dr. Jeremy Weiss.
Thank you very much, Joanne. And thank you, Sarah. Always a pleasure to have you here. And thanks to
thank
a wonderful
so much,
audience. Whether you tuned in live or whether you're going to listen to us later on demand, whether you clicked on a link or whether you made a phone call and you're patiently waiting in our queue, we're glad to have you here. And until next time, joyous journeys, amazing adventures, and let's be thankful for all the wonderful things we have. Thanks again, Joanne and Sarah.
Thank you. Have a great night, all.
You too. Mwah.